Hey there, guys and gals. It's been 344 days since I last posted an episode of Getting Off Course. I bet you thought I was dead, but I'm not. Before we kick things off today, I want to tell you about an old friend of ours, Chasing Aces. Chasing Aces makes some of my favorite golf gear, and they've added some really cool pieces to their lineup over the last year. Head on over to chasingacesgolf.com and pick up a t-shirt, hat, polo, ball marker, or my personal favorite, the Franklin Would Go windbreaker. Again, that's chasingacesgolf.com. All right, you've waited 344 days. It's time for the show. Welcome to the Getting Off Course podcast. I'm your host, Josh Waldron, and this is episode number 22. I'm joined today by Matt Holder, head of product at Loop. We're going to talk about golf, how technology is changing the game, and a variety of other topics related to building out an idea from start to finish. Matt, thanks for joining me today.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start with your golf origin story. How did you first get connected to the sport?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the specific moment, but I do remember being a kid and going into like the local like sporting goods store and having an interest in golf. I think, you know, obviously there's probably some alignment somewhere in there with Tiger Woods' early career. Sure. And some popularity rise in the mid 90s as a result. But I remember asking my dad to for clubs, and you know, they were expensive, and I think I saved up a bunch of money to buy kind of like a Wilson Pro Staff starter set as a middle schooler. And I wore the hell out of those clubs. I would play in the summers and play during my off time. Even though I played baseball primarily, I always found myself on the course during my off time, just trying to get better. And I had fun doing it. It was no particular ambition other than just a fun pastime.
Very cool. Did you have like a course that was local to you that you could get to fairly easily?
Yeah. So, my family has, you know, never been like members of a course or anything like that. So, you know, as a kid, I primarily played the, you know, the par threes, the local par threes that were around. There's one, pretty close called Emerald Hills Golf Course that, is just kind of, you know, here, you know, rough and tumble par three that just is good enough, and you can loop it a million times in a day. And yeah. I would do that. Then Mariner's Point is in San Mateo, which is about a 20-minute drive away. And that's kind of that's one where you can actually bring out kind of like a longer iron and, challenges you a bit more, and it's right by the bay. So, it can get really windy and really cold too. So you get kind of everything in one from a challenge, but, those are the two courses like as a kid that I primarily just kind of looped around the whole time and, really kind of developed my addiction to the game.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I have a soft spot in my heart for par three courses. So I love hearing someone tell me that's kind of where it started.
You're not alone. And my kids are on these courses now with me. I take them out to the same places I was hitting at as a kid. So trying to see if they get the bug too.
Very cool. So how would you describe your relationship to golf these days?
I would say it's great. I mean, I have a bad enough addiction where I've made golf my work life and my personal life. So, maybe it's too intense. I just love it. And I love getting out with my wife, getting out with my kids, getting out with my buddies and having a good time and having a fun game, playing a match against, against someone and being a quasi competitive, but fun at the same time. And it's, you know, gets me outdoors and is a great way to just spend time with friends.
Yeah. So we're going to circle back to golf in a minute, but I want you to travel back in time to the early 2000s.
Yep.
You earned a BA in economics.
I did.
What made you decide to pursue that major?
Man, that's a fantastic question. I guess of all the courses I took is kind of like the first 2 years of college, those were the classes that really clicked for me. What really made it interesting for me is how incentives would change behaviors in people. For example, people assign a greater amount of fear to a very low percentage outcome occurring, like a shark attack or a lightning strike, than to something that has a high percentage outcome of happening, like walking across the street in San Francisco and getting hit by a car, which happens very often. It's a very dangerous city to be a pedestrian in, but you know, people don't think twice about crossing the road, but they do about getting into the ocean and have this, you know, inordinate amount of fear over, you know, the unknown and, you know, sharks lurking underwater. So for me, that kind of stuff and the psychology behind it was really interesting. And it's something that I've used kind of like and gone back to throughout my whole career of understanding what drives people to do things and what incentives are they looking for.
Have you been able to recognize any of that in yourself?
Totally. Cause I also surf a lot. So, you know, there are those quiet times in the water where I'm just like, it creeps into your mind of, is there a shark lurking, lurking underwater? And, you know, you start those fears and doubts start creeping in. So I'm not immune to it.
Yeah.
I do understand myself, I think, a little bit more when it happens.
So post-college, you spent a significant amount of time in the real estate world. So both as a broker, then working for some of the top dogs like Trulia, Zillow, et cetera. What did you learn from your time in that space?
Man, I learned a lot. First off, in starting, kind of right out of college, going into real estate, part of that traces back to my studies in economics. And I remember sitting in class, in an econometrics class, which is, you know, a way of using data to measure trends in people's behaviors, and thinking, you know, this would be a really interesting way to value homes within the US. And unbeknownst to me, like Zillow had started doing that with their Zestimate. And then I found that out. I'm like, oh, holy, like someone's doing that. But even though they were doing it already, it kind of clicked in my mind that like, oh, there's something really interesting here within real estate. And so when I graduated college, I just went straight into becoming a broker, because all I know is if I'm interested in something, I just dive right in and try to figure it out. And so I just went deep into it, knowing that I wanted to do something within tech, being from Silicon Valley myself. But I didn't know what to do unless I learned what the business was like. So I spent a couple of years learning the business and then, I built one or two kind of like small startups that frankly, like didn't go anywhere, except out of the second one, it caught Trulia's attention and they brought me on board and, you know, took a chance on a guy that had no tech background, but someone who seemed to be tech inclined and, you know, willing to work hard, and, you know, the rest is history in terms of growing my career. So I joined Trulia pretty early on and learned a lot in terms of building products and building valuable products for consumers as well as for the industry, that being real estate agents and brokers. Learned a lot from other people within the tech space over that time, and then, you know, started applying a lot of those learnings to other companies I joined since then. And today to Loop.
So from your time at Trulia, Zillow, eventually you become head of product at CarGurus.
Yep.
And you've served in this head of product or director of product role a few times. What does that role entail?
You know, it kind of depends on, sometimes it depends on the company you're in. For bigger companies like Google and Amazon, it tends to be mostly a people management role where you're guiding strategy and helping others beneath you accomplish, you know, set goals and help others, facilitate others to accomplish those goals. Within smaller companies, and it's funny to say with like Zillow and Trulia or Houzz or CarGurus that they're smaller, but, you know, Google has over 100,000 employees, whereas these other companies have, you know, a couple thousand at most. It tends to be kind of a dual role where you're both in leadership, but you're also getting, you know, getting your hands dirty and doing a lot of the individual contributor work as well. And so that's kind of like where I've you know, previously thrived with some of these other companies, is that I have a good sense and knack for kind of like setting strategic direction and setting goals and defining what those goals should be, having accountability for them, but also being able to work with the team underneath me to lead from as an individual contributor as well, and help them accomplish their goals while also jumping in and doing the things that need to be done, kind of like an entrepreneur does, to you know, just kind of you do what it takes to make the, you know, help the business grow. So that tends to be like where I find the most interesting things happen, and it's a lot of fun for me too, because I haven't always wanted to be just kind of purely a people manager.
Yeah.
I want to do the things too. I like getting that stuff done. So it's been a lot of fun, and, you know, so much fun that I decided to just start a business and do it, you know, do everything, take on more responsibility.
Couldn't help yourself, right?
Totally.
So we all have things about our job that we could live without. So in that role, are there any parts of that role that you dread or that you try to avoid?
Avoid, I think, is a hard one, because there really is not, like, there is no hiding. Like, you can't hide, especially as in a leadership position. Like, I try to avoid conflicts within the team. Like, I try to proactively solve for them. Mm-hmm. They happen anyway, and it's just kind of like, it's a bummer, because you just want to do the things. You don't want to have to, it's hard to deal with interpersonal issues between different people on the team. But at the same time, like, we're all human and it happens. And so, as much as you want to just say like, hey, can we just look past it and keep doing the things, you know, sometimes you have to pull back and find a way to help people through whatever conflicts are happening. Sure. So it's not the most fun work, it's unavoidable. So, you know, you try to do your best to navigate through it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Well, with all of this experience in the tech space, I'd love for you to assume the role of clairvoyant Matt for a moment. Are you up for this?
Sure.
So golf and technology are becoming more and more intertwined. What tech developments do you predict for the next 5 to 10 years?
I think that from an overall theme, I think you're going to start seeing more golfer course connection, more of a connected course experience that happens for the average golfer. Over the past couple of years, obviously there's been a lot more quant golfer, things happening within the sport, like Phil Mickelson, especially Bryson DeChambeau are kind of like more leaders of that, kind of Phil, the old guard, Bryson, the new kid, with being the science of golf and figuring out the strategy combined with the metrics and, you know, self-improvement to make the best scores possible. Mm-hmm. What hasn't happened is you don't see as much of that technology being incorporated on the course itself, and then how that impacts the golfers, both on course and off course experience. And I think you'll start seeing a lot of blending of the two, whether it's, you go play a Topgolf or a simulator, then go on to a green grass course. And, you have a lot of things that are being tracked for you personally as a golfer, but then also in terms of the access to golf and the ability to more easily get on the course and have a great experience on the course is going to be dramatically changed too. As you saw, probably with Trulia Zillow making it easier to shop for a home, as you see with like car crews making it easier to shop for, a car. Those things are going to happen within golf too. And that's primarily like the reason why I started Loop in the first place, is that it's just really, really, really painful to find tee times at courses that you want to play. Yeah. And even sometimes even harder to get them. And it really shouldn't be such a drag to try and play the game that you love. and technology can help out a lot there. And that's, you know, Loop wants to be the ones to, we want to be the ones to solve that for golfers and help them have a great time and play golf more often.
Yeah. So in your heart of hearts, do you think that technology will actually make us better golfers?
I would say yes. Like, I think that we're better golf, like the average golfer is better today than, you know, 20, 50, 100 years ago, primarily because of technology, not just in terms of the clubs, but ball technology, you know, strength training. Like, there are lots of different learnings and technological advancements that have happened to improve the game. And I think that that will continue to happen, both in terms of the equipment getting better, golfers get being more fit and being able to hit further, last longer and play longer, but also in terms of golfers knowing themselves better and being able to better understand, like, should you really go for it in two on this par five when there are a bunch of bunkers in front of, like, in front of the green and all, like, on either side of the fairway? Probably not a great idea. Take your 7-iron out and just kind of, like, lob it up and give yourself a 120-yard shot in, right? Like, there's a lot of that that's still kind of, you know, Texas windage that happens. And
sure.
Sometimes, and that's like, sometimes you need the caddy in your head to be like, hey, dummy, don't do it. You're going to think about how bad, you're going to think about this shot the rest of your round. So don't do it.
Yeah. What I'm wondering is if there's some people that still just can't be reached. They just have to do it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously PGA professionals have a hard time with that too. And we've seen some great blowups in the past, as a result. So it's always entertaining, and it's entertaining to, you know, when you're playing with your buddies to watch your buddy go for it and, you know, end up in misery, hoping that they, you know, obviously are triumphant. You can, you know, give them a high five and stuff like that. But, you know, the human element obviously makes it a lot of fun. So can't get rid of it all.
So we're going to talk about your product in a minute, but other than Loop, are there other golf tech projects that you think could be game changers or things that you're paying attention to?
Man, that is a really good question. I think some of the analytics technology that's coming out, like I've talked about kind of like quantified golf. I think some of that stuff is really interesting. I think it's got a long ways to go in terms of being really practically useful for, you know, your average golfer that, you know, plays a couple rounds a month or less. But I think that there's something really interesting there. And obviously, like pro golf, college golf, they're trying to figure it out and crack that case because it's very high stakes for them. And they're kind of leading the charge in the same way, kind of, you know, racing teams, you know, auto racing teams kind of lead the charge in terms of development of engines and other things like that. So I think some of that technology is going to start to trickle down to, you know, your average golfer over the course of the years. But I think it'll be really interesting to see how that impacts people's approach to the game and what happens to people's handicaps and average scores and stuff as a result.
Yeah. So May of 2021, you decided to launch Loop. Give kind of the quick summary again for my listeners. What is Loop?
So Loop is a tee time marketplace where you can find any available tee time in any course in the US. And if you can't find the right tee time, you can leverage our wait list, and our kind of expertly trained gophers will monitor the course for you 24/7 and snag a matching tee time as soon as it becomes available. So whether you're, you know, want to book 3 months in advance or you want a last minute tee time, we can help get that for you automatically. So you can go, we'll do it in your sleep. We'll do it while you're playing around a golf and anything and living your best life. You don't have to think about it. We'll just get it for you.
Do users have to pay for that feature, like to use the wait list?
They do. They do. So we take a, kind of like a nominal booking fee as a part of that because, you know, it's really a convenience fee. Like, the question is, do you want to stay like I used to all the time to play golf, is stay up until midnight or, you know, knowing that the course I want to play is going to release tee times and then frantically refresh and try to get it, seeing everything disappear and then having that oh shit moment where I'm like, okay, now I've got to refresh every morning and, you know, randomly and see if a cancellation happens so I can get on the course. And we kind of take all that off the shoulders of the golfer, and they can just tell us what their preferences are, and we'll do it for them. So it's a huge time saver, and we're seeing a lot of our customers kind of give us really great feedback that they're like, you know, I had a really hard time getting on Rancho Park in LA or City Park in Denver or something like that. And, you know, I found Loop, and then all of a sudden I'm like getting back on the course when I want to and getting tee times that I didn't think I could get. So it's really exciting to get that feedback and see people, seeing us being able to help people get on the course.
How did your past roles, so some of the roles that we've discussed, how did they prepare you for this project?
You know, in a big way. I've kind of been, you know, around a few major marketplace brands, kind of vertical marketplaces, and CarGurus and Houzz and Zillow and Trulia. And believe it or not, a lot of the same markers of those industries before those companies existed are visible and exist right now within golf, within real estate before Zillow and Trulia. You know, you had to use newspapers and talk to an agent directly to find an available home and shop for homes. And although like golf has adopted obviously some technology for online tee sheets and stuff like that, it's still really hard to go course website by course website, see what's available, and then be able to easily book it and have a convenient way of booking tee times. And so, you know, a lot of what of the work that we did within those other companies very applicable to what we're building at Loop. And I think that you know, I have a good skill set to bring to the industry and try to help not only bring value to the golfer, but also bring value to the courses and help courses, you know, the golf courses thrive as well. Because let's be honest, we're not going to golf unless the course continues to exist. Mm-hmm. And we want the course to have the best conditions possible when we show up there too. So I think I'm pretty uniquely, you know, qualified to do this. And, you know, I'm hoping that I can use all those skills to kind of make golf a lot better for, you know, all the golfers in the US.
So in my humble life, I've taken some small ideas from concept to reality. We won't try to measure their successfulness right now, but nothing with the scope of your current undertaking. So after the idea for Loop forms, what is the first step toward making it a reality? Where do you go from there?
Getting a team, convincing people to hop on the crazy train. You know, like, you know, people around here, obviously, like there's a lot of startups that get created within the San Francisco Bay Area, which makes it a great breeding ground for new ideas and new concepts. Golf isn't necessarily the most popular you know, industry within the engineering set within you know, anywhere. So, you know, getting people on board is, you know, obviously a hard task, you know, just in and of itself, but throwing like, kind of, are you interested in golf? Is it something that you'd have passion around? Is makes it a little tougher. So first is just finding a team that, you know, you can have, cause I can't do all the things. Yeah. But you know, from there is trying to come up with an idea, not try to make it perfect, but get something out that you can get feedback on and use that to fuel you to the next step. And, you know, we've done a lot of things wrong, but you know, we learn from them and we try to learn from them as fast as possible to kind of grow. So it's just doing that, rinse and repeat as quickly as possible forever.
Is there like one piece of feedback that really surprised you that you just didn't anticipate? You never saw it on the radar, but someone kind of turned you a different direction?
Yeah, I think that we had, part of our journey was we built an app which still exists. It's kind of like a Strava for golf, and it was, you know, something that we obviously had a lot of passion around, and people still use to this day. And it's really interesting to see and hear the feedback from people that are using it. But part of the feedback was from those users. They were more like, there was more interest in just using a free tool, but not necessarily like there wasn't necessarily a business directly out of that. And, you know, from, you know, wanting to achieve this grander vision and really have the kind of impact that we want to have within the golf world, that's obviously something that was hard to hear because we want to, you know, we obviously need to make money to survive, and we can't just, you know, build everything for free. So you know, that was something that led us to kind of focus more specifically on building out the Tee Time marketplace that was, you know, really always a part of the business plan. But in terms of the sequencing of things, that we learned from that and really fast tracked that as a part of, you know, moving to that sequence as quickly as we could.
So when you look at other Tee Time engines, and you know, I almost hesitate to mention their names with you on the line here, but like Golf Now, Tee Off, Supreme Golf, sure. How do you set yourself apart from them?
It's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, obviously what they've done for the sport has been spectacular, and they have a lot of value to bring to golfers. That being said, I think there's also a big, there's a lot of room and there's a lot of space for companies like Loop to come in and provide a different value proposition that from them. And I would say that our differentiator is that, you know, we're not focused on discount golf. That's something that Golf Now and Supreme kind of cover, and they've got that space. We're more focused on convenience and search and compare, and providing a really easy experience to find any tee time, not just the, you know, the limited courses that are on Golf Now or on Supreme. Because, you know, if you go to one site and you're looking for somewhere to play, if they don't have all the local courses, then you're probably not going to use them that often, which is, I think, a lot of feedback that we've heard from golfers and why they're excited about what we're doing, even though, like, we don't have our course coverage quite there yet, but we're working on it. But they also don't have any of the tools that help, you know, golfers book in advance or have a waitlist system that, you know, do more to help golfers get on the course. And they're really hyper focused on kind of like giving golf deals, and they've built a really great business around that. And I think we can stand apart based off of the kind of like convenience and the tools that help golfers get on the course as much as possible.
Gotcha. So what are some of the initial challenges that you've had to overcome with building this Tee Time engine?
A lot of them. There are a lot. I'd imagine. You know, there's no shortage of challenges when you're starting something, and a big part of it is just, you know, trying to put yourself out there and get the feedback and apply it. But I would say kind of the two main challenges are, you know, to make it very blunt, are, you know, building up course supply. Like, you're building a two-sided marketplace. So that requires having courses with tee times that you can package up into one central location, and then build, you know, getting in front of golfers and finding something of value for them to help connect the two. Mm-hmm. And the discovery of that has been rife with challenges and trying to figure out how do we get in front of more golfers, and how do we do it in a way that doesn't burn a ton of cash? How do we build up the course supply, and how we do it in a way that supports courses, and not in a way that they feel like they're, you know, having to give up a lot of control or a lot of value, which is something that, you know, some of the other marketplaces that are out there kind of do. And a lot of courses are not super happy with that. So figuring out those, back to kind of like the incentives of like, what are the incentives on either side of the marketplace, and how do you find a way that a symbiotic way to connect those in a way that is a benefit to everybody. So challenges we're still working on today, obviously, but they'll never go away. You know, that's kind of like the always the focus.
Who's been easier to reach or connect with, the courses or the golfers?
The golfers have been, I think, easier to connect with because they feel the pain more acutely. Mm-hmm. For anybody that's, you know, that one person in your golf group, there's always one or two people in your golf group that really are the ones that set the tee times up and get everybody out there. And God bless them. They are saints. They are heroes. It's a lot of work just trying to get your buddies all to agree on a date and a time, and then figure out the right way to bring it up to part in front of partners so that they say yes and all the things, right? They've been easy to connect with. The courses have been a little bit more shy, and for good reason. They've had, I kind of alluded to, like some of the other businesses that have been involved in the tech space, and they've been burnt in the past by that. And there's a lot of scar tissue that around that we learned as we were doing this that we didn't even realize we were running into. Mm-hmm. And so trying to overcome that and be like, hey, listen, like we come in peace. We're actually we're doing something completely different from what you've seen before in a way that truly benefits you and helps you increase your revenue while, you know, helping golfers have a great experience. So that's been kind of like our experience today, but we're starting to break those barriers down and create more momentum behind us on both sides.
Good. Keep up the good work.
Trying.
So we can skip this question if you'd like, but I'd be interested in knowing how the website, and you referenced the app too, but how they generate revenue.
Yeah. So happy to answer it. Like we generate revenue through the convenience fee that we charge on bookings. And I guess like what I didn't cover before, but I think is worth saying, is that fee is only payable. Like you don't pay us anything up front to use the service. You only pay when we successfully book something for you. Yeah. So if you want to have a standing, like book every Saturday out at your local course for the next 5 years, you could do that with us. And every week, as soon as the tee sheet opens, like we'll find that tee time and book it for you and do that. But you don't pay us until that booking has happened. So if we don't happen to get it for you, then, you know, there's no money exchanged at that point. So, but that's primarily how we do it. Like, obviously there are other ways that we could monetize through ads and things like that. But from past experiences, I know, you know, kind of consumers hate, you know, ad packed web pages and things like that. So we're trying to avoid some of that, at least in the outset.
Yeah. So that's the primary revenue stream, the convenience fee. Is there any other behind the scenes stuff that you want to share?
Man, I don't know. What do you have in mind?
No, just this is your baby. You know, I wonder what you think about that someone like me wouldn't think about.
I think there are probably probably a lot of things, but probably not something that I would necessarily would be interesting to other people or I would share. But you know, I think like we're obviously doing a lot of business development and talking with a lot of interesting people within the space, and so. We're hoping that, you know, that leads to some big things that'll happen, you know, over the next 3 to 6 months on that front. But I can't really talk anymore.
Sure.
You know, give more details around that.
All right. So I think you've made the case that your product is perfect for someone who wants tee times at a particular place where it's hard to get. And your job is just making it all easier. Sort of a set it and forget it. We'll take care of it. You give us the specs. And it's our job to make it happen.
Yep.
Good. So there it is, folks. If you want to find the best tee times, the best courses, you should visit loopgolf.co or search for Loop Golf in the App Store. All right, Matt. We end each podcast with a 10-question lightning round. You ready?
Here we go. Fire away.
All right. Question one. If I have my dates right, you were working at Car Gurus during COVID. Is that right?
That's correct.
In one word, describe the used car market during that time.
Hot.
Question two. If you could give one piece of advice for landing the best deal on a used car, what would it be?
That's a fantastic question. The best advice is to always, always, always negotiate on price and price alone. Look up there's plenty of videos on the Foursquare. There's this infamous thing called the Foursquare that car dealers use.
Okay.
And they try to get you to negotiate on your loan rate or your loan term so that they never have to actually negotiate on the price itself and consumers always lose.
Yeah.
Ignore it, negotiate on price.
All right. That's good advice, folks. Tuck that one away. All right. You're also into skiing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I am.
What's the coolest place that you've ever skied?
Man, I don't know if I have like the coolest ever. Colorado is pretty, I mean, in terms of an area, Colorado is pretty great in terms of just the largeness of the mountains and the vertical that you have access to. And there's just a massive, you know, obviously ski places go ski there, tons of mountains. So, That to me is pretty epic. I know like Utah is pretty fantastic too, but I can't say I've been to any sort of like super, like I haven't been at, you know, Jackson Hole yet. So that would probably be a key for me.
Yeah. Keep it on the list. So you are a man of many talents, and word on the street is also that you play some rec league softball.
Yeah, I do.
What position do you play?
Whatever I need to play. You know, I was a baseball guy growing up, so I kind of can play wherever I need to, with pitcher, third, first, outfield. Like I got all covered. I just played on Monday. I played second base. So
okay.
Yeah, I'll go wherever I'm needed.
I'm assuming this is a slow pitch league.
It is. Yeah, it's a slow pitch league.
That pitcher slot, you can take some balls right back at you.
That's a dangerous spot. That's a dangerous spot to be.
So if you could choose your softball hitting legacy, would you rather be known for base hits or home runs?
For softball, home runs. Like,
yeah.
You know, base hits pay the bills, and that's right. You know, if you're a pro baseball player, but you know, rec softball, you're here to hit, and you're here to hit bombs. So swing for the fences.
Does your league have any sort of home run limits per game or anything like that?
Yeah, they do. There are like two different leagues that I kind of go back and forth depending on which dads invite me out, but. Either it's, you know, you can only go up like one or two home runs above the other team, and then it becomes an automatic out. But this other league is, you only get one for the entire game. So once if you hit a solo home run, that's just a total waste.
Yeah.
And then everything out after that is an out. So
yeah, I've played in one of those.
Kind of a bummer.
Yeah. You know, it seems like things shouldn't be that way, but what can you do? All right. Question 7. You've spent a great deal of time in California. If you were forced to live somewhere else, where would you go?
Where would I go? Oh man, I struggle with either going abroad to like Spain and living in Spain for a bit, or I think like going to live in probably like Park City, I think would be the second place. Although like, you know, I'm a California boy, so I have no idea what like shoveling snow in a winter for the whole winter is really like. I'd probably hate it, but I would love the skiing. So I don't know.
Yeah. Surprisingly good for your heart, shoveling snow. You'll get that heart rate up real quick.
Oof. I've done it a couple times, and you know, every time I walk away saying I'll never do this again.
All right. 3 more questions for you. Question 8, users can post their loops on the Loop app. What's the best round you've ever posted?
Personally on the Loop app or just like in general? I think my career low is like a 75.
Yeah.
Out here. So, you know, still trying to figure out how to break that, but it was just one of those days where I was swinging easy and the weather was good. So it worked out.
Yeah. You just got to take them when you can get them.
Yep.
Is there a golf product that's a must have for you on the course? Something you've got to have with you?
Yes. I mean, there are a couple, but the first one that comes to mind is my JBL clip. I need a speaker. Like, I'm not one of those guys that, you know, wants quiet on the course, and, I'm not super proper. I want to hear music. I want to have a good time. I need background noise and I guess probably it helps me play better too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not scientifically proven, but in my mind.
Final question. Where will you be playing your next round of golf?
I will be playing my next round of golf tomorrow at Presidio in San Francisco, which is a pretty awesome public track up in SF.
Great. All right, Matt. Thanks for joining me today. Before we go, give us the rundown. Where can listeners find you and your work?
Well, you can reach out to me directly, matt@loopgolf.co, and you can find any tee time at any course we cover, or get on the or use our wait list to get tee times as soon as they appear at loopgolf.co.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out gettingoffcourse.com to see the show notes or to listen to past episodes. And if you have the time to rate and review this podcast, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Josh.
Getting Off Course is presented by Par 3 Near Me. Visit par3nearme.com to find a Par 3 or executive golf course near you.